Hi, everybody. I am Jeff Gibbard, and I am your next speaker. So I'm here to talk to you about integrating offline marketing with social media to drive brand awareness. Yes, I know. You've been waiting the entire Social Media Strategy Summit for this moment. Well, it's here. There it is. You should follow me on Snapchat. No, I'm serious. Those that follow me on Snapchat will testify. You should follow me on Snapchat. Yeah, I act like a complete fool. I will never give you marketing advice on there. Rare, sometimes, maybe. But generally, no. That's the Strawberry Queen. That's one of my characters. There's also Freddy. There's Dennis, but you can call him Gary. I would strongly suggest you find me on Snapchat. At the end, I will give you my Snap code. Yeah. Nope, in the end, I'm going to give it to you. We have to keep the attention on this. So these are the other places that you can find me, all over the interwebs. Can anybody not see that? Well, you can't move closer anyway, so screw it. Before I begin, you'll notice that I have behind me a series of slides, and I always take this detour before I begin because I really like for you to be engaged. See how we're connecting right now? These are not there to put you to sleep. They're really there to serve as context, so you won't see a lot of text-heavy slides. I do what's known as West Coasting. It's a style of presentation that uses mainly pictures, and then I talk about the pictures, but every once in a while, I will put some words up there. So please, don't fall asleep. It makes me very, very sad. Here are my rules. Please, interrupt me. Tweet everything I say. Tweet about how handsome I am. It helps to feed the LinkedIn profile. Stay off of Facebook and stay off of email because both of those will take your attention away from me, and I need your engagement to survive up here. I'm an only child, and if I don't have your full attention, I will crumble and wither away and die right in front of your eyes. Also, call your mother. She worries. Universally, that is good advice. Right now, my mother is very worried. Let's dive in, shall we? In the beginning, there was advertising, there was print, there was radio, and there was television. We all remember those days. Before, it was slightly around the time when internet sounded like beep-doop. We had these. And brands were so happy to fork over money in exchange for exposure in that day and age. And it was good. It was good for a while. Everybody was happy. Nobody questioned it. But then, Facebook and the Snapchats. By the way, you can now follow me on Snapchat. That's Freddy. And all of these new technologies changed the way that brands were able to communicate with people and more importantly, changed the way that we communicated with brands. So it disrupted and shifted the entire landscape and it made things so crazy and we're still trying to get our arms wrapped around this whole world, aren't we? I mean, does anybody here know everything aside from me? No? Okay, good, exactly. So what happened is that when these new channels came out, they gave us the ability to reach our audience at a much lower cost. I mean, right now you can get video views on Facebook for pennies, whereas if you were to do a television ad, it would still cost you buckets of dollars. We also have the options to be so much more targeted than we ever used to be. We can now, I can target people that are talking about tacos within 1 mile of the Space Needle. That is awesome. I can also target single ladies between 18 and 24 to tell them about X, Y, and Z or whatever, or any other demographic group you can think of based upon household income, single, et cetera, and that's so much better than just placing an ad in some sort of random offline publication, right? It was so much better now that we have this. And we have the ability to do measurement, which is great. We can now look at all of this data and we can inform future campaigns and do so much cool stuff. Now, most of us don't know what we're doing with a lot of that data, and when we hand over reports to clients, they go, That's nice. They put it up on the shelf. So the world has significantly changed as a result of all of these new technologies. So one might think that there's no place for traditional media anymore. So all of this stuff created a couple different types of fragmentation. The first fragmentation is obvious. Its audiences have fragmented everywhere now. It used to be you just had print, radio, and television. And on television, you only had a certain number of stations, et cetera. Now we have satellite radio, we have Pandora, we have Spotify, we have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have Snapchat. There's so many places for the audience to go to get information, entertainment, and value. Attention has therefore been dispersed. Where it used to be that prime time meant something, now prime time is divided between several different screens. It's a whole different world than it used to be. And that means that we've also fragmented our marketing budgets. If you have to think about running an entire marketing department, now how do you advocate for putting up a billboard when you could run Twitter ads at a much lower cost and a much more targeted? And then finally, marketing specializations have cropped up. So I alluded to before, does anybody in here know everything? Probably not, because what we have in here are some people who are really damn good at Pinterest, or really good at Facebook, or great at community management, or great at strategy, or some people know a little bit about SEO and blogging and copywriting. But nobody really knows everything. So now even where we spend our money on people has fragmented. It makes it very complicated. And the social media douchebag will tell you, traditional media is dead, bruh. You gotta start scoping ASAP, man. You gotta get on that Snapchat. Don't buy the hype. Don't listen to the social media douchebag. It's true. Circulation of newspapers and print is in decline. Undoubtedly, we've seen the signs that the death of traditional media is slow but coming. We have seen that streaming is starting to increase, and we've seen that actual TV viewing is on the decrease. But there are still audiences in these places. I think it's really just the business model that's been shattered. But as a distribution channel, I still think traditional modes of media have value, especially when you think about them in an integrated way. So I'd like to ask a quick question of everybody in this audience. And I realize that I have a slightly skewed sampling in this audience. How many of you are using Twitter for marketing? Hands up. Participate. It's a pretty decent amount. Okay, cool. How many, again, hands up, we're going to second question here. How many of you are using newspapers for marketing? There's a lot less. In case, if any of you in the front didn't turn around, it's a lot less hands. So interestingly enough, here's two stats that I found, and I'm not a big fan of stats because they usually put people to sleep, so I swear this will be one of the last ones, but which one do you think is Twitter and which one do you think is newspapers? Shout out, somebody smart. Yep, Twitter's on the top, newspapers are on the bottom, but if you look at that, that's actually not, it's not as wide as you might think it would be with all of this talk of social media and all of this online and et cetera, if you think about it, that's really not as far off as you would think it is. So to put it a different way, if you're targeting people 50 plus and you're on Twitter, you're probably missing the boat and you're only capturing a few of them, whereas there's a huge opportunity to potentially capture mind share and attention on traditional newspaper channels. Now, obviously, the younger generation are always going to be more towards the digital and new media channels, but there's still not that big of a discrepancy. Those numbers aren't that far off. So anybody know what the daily circulation of the New York Times is? Guess. 2 million, you're close. It's 1.3 million people, daily distribution. It's a pretty decent amount. And if you think about it, not many of us have 1.3 million Twitter followers, at least not in this room, aggregate maybe. So if you put one of those newspapers in one of those 1.3 million people's hands, there's a chance that they'll look at it just in the same way as if you had 1.3 million Twitter followers. And the Chicago Tribune has about 450,000. So as you go down and down, you get more and more targeted, smaller and more targeted audiences, smaller spends, et cetera. How many people in this room watched television last week? Within the last week, how many of you have turned on a television and watched an actual broadcast, DVR'd or otherwise? I would assume most of you, right? You know, I'm mostly Netflix now, I'm a cord cutter. And if you look at the trends in TV viewing, they're pretty consistent, actually. People still watch a lot of TV. It's less and less hours, it's moving more time adjusted, and it's moving more online, but people are still watching television. Top 10 shows have a distribution of 110 million viewers, which is pretty shocking to me, especially when I look at the first one being The Big Bang Theory. Does anyone actually find that show funny in this room? Really? Get out. I don't understand it at all, which leads me to my next question. Laugh track, yes or no? I find it insulting. Anybody? Laugh tracks? This is for me. This has nothing to do with anything that's going to teach you something. I just need to know, am I the outlier with laugh tracks? I hate them. I find them very insulting. I know when to laugh. Okay, how many of you listened to the radio in the last week? It's not a bad amount. And you know what? It's consistent with what we found in the research. About 90% of people have listened to a radio in at least the last week. So we're still getting distribution on these channels. Okay, how many of you have a business card in your pocket? From someone, it's either your own or somebody else. My guess, all of you. And if you didn't bring business cards, shame on you, and I will call your boss. How many of you have recently looked at a billboard and can recall what it said, who it was for, or something. Drove to work, you saw a billboard. Anybody? Good. They're still there. A lot of people can still think about them. So, oh, and the last one. How many of you have attended an event? Come on, you're at one. That was a trick question. Maybe it didn't raise your hands. You're non-participatory, and I don't like it. So there's still a window of opportunity in traditional media. There's still a lot of things that we can do to get in front of the right people. Now, I'm not here to advocate that you drop your social media spend. That's ridiculous. I'm not telling you not to do SEO, and I'm not telling you to throw your website away. That would all be insane. But I am saying maybe you should think about whether or not offline channels provide some sort of an opportunity. And I believe that most of you are probably thinking, I don't really know how that works, which is why you're here. And luckily, anybody get that reference? Come on, that's Pulp Fiction. I'm the guy that's gonna tell you about it because I am going to give you the offline to online blueprint. So if you were gonna start taking notes, now's the time. Everything else before this was the setup. I'm gonna give you a step-by-step system. I'm making all sorts of old 80s references. I'm just realizing it, that I am like way old. Oh God, NKOTB. Step one. Pick your channels. This is gonna be the full step-by-step system. I'm gonna walk through them, I'm gonna give you some examples, but here's the process. Pick your channels is number one, which means you need to think about things like print, newspapers, magazines, trade publications. We can talk about direct mail here. Really anything that's in printed format, flyers, you name it. Television, another one. Generally very expensive, but sometimes can be worth it, especially if you're trying to build brand awareness quickly. Radio, business cards, live events, billboards. These are ones I'm going to talk about mostly. I may not touch on all of them, but I'm going to go through these. These are your channels that you need to think about. Is this something that we should use? And again, I'm not advocating you use all of these. I'm advocating that you think about these as choices. Next, pick your goals. Any Flyers fans in here? Yes. Sorry, we suck. Objectives. Here are some things that I only want to cover a few of them because obviously there's brand awareness, but it's boring. Isn't it boring? I'm so sick of that. So let's talk about how we can integrate the offline with the online through goals like this. Content marketing. You can amplify your content marketing with offline media and offline marketing. We'll go over that. You can build a community. I have a great, very personal story about that I'm going to tell you. No, it's not that kind of personal. I saw the face you made. It's not like that. It's not weird. It's not going to get like hush-hush in here, I promise. And then you can generate leads or fill a sales funnel. Okay, three objectives. Okay, I'm gonna give everybody that I see writing just another second to write that down. Also, I'm gonna put up another slide where you can see it all later. Okay, next. Anybody know that reference? Come on, that's a fresh one. Okay, good. Yo, major key alert. I'm about to tell y'all the major key about how it is that you can use your objectives and your channels because they don't want you to win with offline and online media. Keys to success. Call to action should bring them online. Obviously, that's the title of the session. It's like dare. Next, make it measurable. Finally, make it memorable. Clicker didn't work. Make it memorable, make it measurable, and bring them online. Everybody with me so far? Good. Okay. Once you get them online, there's a couple things that we can do with them. So one is that you can bring them, or getting them online, you wanna bring them either to a landing page, to a social network, potentially a messaging platform, to a forum or a group, or you could ask them to take part in some sort of an online conversation using hashtags. So very easy to find, very easy to remember if you do it right. Okay, so these are some of your options for getting them online. Once they're online, here are some of the things that you can do once you get them there. So once you get them either to a landing page, to a social network, to a conversation, et cetera, you can increase their content consumption. If you're doing the content marketing objective, you bring them on, you feed them content, builds trust, it builds authority, know, like, and trust, sales, blah, you get what I'm saying? Capture leads or subscribers. If you bring them to a particular page where you exchange an email address in exchange for a white paper or a webinar or something like that, you can capture leads and you can nurture those, which I will show visually in just a moment. You can engage them in a conversation, and that can be for all manner of different reasons. You can want to learn something from them. You can ask them to advocate for something. You can share information with them that they might not know about. You can generally use them as a focus group or do whatever you need to do with them, really. I'm not here to tell you what to do with your community. And you can retarget ads to them, which I'm also going to show you how you can do that as well. So these are some of the things once you get them online, what you can do. Measurement. This part is undoubtedly the most important part of all offline online marketing integrations. If you do not measure it, you are doing exactly what they did back in the day at the beginning of my presentation, at the beginning prior to the world of online and such. We just kind of fired, spray and pray. Why spray and pray when we have so much awesome measurement? So you can use unique URLs and landing pages. I mean, URLs are like 10 bucks for a year. Just buy one, do something different. You can use shortened URLs where you can track clicks. You really can't track much else beyond that, but you can put together a report and see how each one is doing, and you can measure individual campaigns against one another. You can use Google UTM tags, otherwise known as Google Custom URLs. And that allows you to track, and you can also, by the way, use these in conjunction. So you can do a Google UTM tag to a landing page and then use it as a shortened URL. Boom, mind blown. You can use 301 redirects. This is something that I do on Instagram. So on Instagram, generally in my bio, for my company for at least, I do truevoicemedia.com/IG. And in the back end of my website, whatever I want to link people to, I just do a 301 redirect from truevoicemedia.com/IG to whatever I'm promoting. So when I put a picture up, I say, link in the bio. And I don't have to change it each time and make it look silly or whatever. I just change it in the back end of the website. So using 301 redirects, which is basically just saying, if you go here, point them there. It just redirects them. And then phone tracking. If you use, for instance, you could start Google Voice numbers for a campaign and have three different ones and track which one gets the most call volume. But if you're not measuring the impact of all of your offline campaigns, you're not going to know which ones are working, which consequently means you don't know where you should be allocating your budget, what you should be shutting off, and it won't inform your online campaigns, something that I can touch on in a little bit as well. Okay, so this is the blueprint. If you want to take a picture of it, now is the time, although I will give you one more chance to do it, if you'd like to. And I would legitimately go through it with your team, or just yourself if you're a one-person team, in this order. Think about what you have access to in the way of channels, pick what the objective is that you're trying to accomplish, and then try to make it online, measurable, and memorable. And if you see that things aren't matching up, go back and rethink it. These are the three elements. So most people, I think, in marketing tend to think of online and offline as these two very separate entities. You know, there's like, oh, there's traditional media, and we'll give that to the marketing department, and then we'll give the digital kids all the digital stuff. But I don't really see it that way. And that's why we see most of our billboards and offline advertising as very brand awareness type plays. Like, this is obviously, to us, we know it's Snapchat, but older people that may not know what Snapchat is may look at that and it'll do the same thing as a lot of the references that I've put into this slide for you guys. So they'll do things like this, which very clever, cool, Lowe's, very cool, it's unfinished, you didn't even finish the billboard, rah, it's so clever, but there's nothing there aside from, okay, Lowe's, another brand impression, great. There's nothing measurable, there's nothing actionable. This is clever, your move BMW, and then checkmate. Awesome, you're playing games with one another, that's so cute. I've seen that a while ago. Anybody else see that one before? It's one of my favorites. So what's missing is the call to action. And granted, there's a lot more to marketing than direct marketing and conversions and sales and blah, 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 blah. But if you want to integrate your offline and online marketing and be able to justify that spend and really make the most of it, you need to add a call to action, or at least have some part of your campaigns include a call to action. So I think it's more that we need to integrate the two, not separate the two, and we need to think about how they work together. And it works both ways. If I had more time in this presentation, I would talk about how you can use online to feed your offline. Because that's a lot of what I do with some of my clients, is using the online to feed events or to drive people into the store, things like that. But today we're talking about taking offline, driving them online. So this is what most marketers try to do when they are trying to integrate offline and online marketing. I purposely didn't set the setting on that to loop, because I would just sit here and just watch it like six times, because it's like the cutest thing. Or they do what Ralphie does, and oh, you tried to pin the tail on the donkey and get it right, but you didn't, stupid Ralphie. So I'm very upset that none of you got this. And I was going to, like, in a different room, I would have run through this as a radio announcer voice. Listen up, Little Mac. But I'm not going to do that for you because you don't even get the reference, so it's lost on you, and you've ruined my day. But this is a reference to Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. But what I was talking about here is that most radio commercials that I hear, at least, they do something like this where they just scream and yell at you, and they fill it with like all these different words, and it's very long, and then they tell you to go to a phone number, and honestly, where do we listen to our radio? In the car, right? Does anybody else listen to a radio otherwise? Anybody? No, exactly. Listen to it in the car. And who is saying, like, oh, wait, I have to pull over. I have to take down that phone number. Nobody. So you try and remember it. So now you're not even focusing on driving. And you're like, okay, it's 007-373-5963. By the way, it's the code to Mike Tyson. That is an awesome reference. I'm sorry. I'm really upset about this. I even put in little Mac. So anyway, that is an example of doing it poorly. You're not taking into consideration the mindset that the person is in. They're driving, they're just trying to get to work, they're trying to be educated, and they deal with the ads because you don't want to keep switching the channels. And you like Preston and Steve in the morning, it's good. So it's too long, it's got three calls to action, it's got a phone number, it's got a place to go, and it's got a website address, it's too much. Or you do billboards like this, where it's just full of text. You just can't even possibly get through it before you get into an accident. And then it's got a super long URL on it that just goes to the homepage. Right? Terrible. Lauren Ipsum. Or this shit. QR codes on billboards. Terrible idea. Like Scott and Stratton said that QR codes kill kittens. And while I don't agree with that exactly, especially now that we have Snap codes and Facebook Messenger codes, and there are some uses for codes, that's dumb. So nobody ever do that. And then there's this shit that Ramon De Leon likes to call bad social media disease. Can somebody please tweet that and tweet Ramon Wow to him so he knows that I did that, Ellie? I'm counting on you for that. So this thing where you say, we're online, and then it's up to you to try and find us. Now granted, this is Staples, and guess what their username is? Staples, you win a prize. You can now find them online. But this sort of stuff is super annoying, and a lot of smaller brands, and especially if you're like a local brand, like let's say you're Best Buy Philadelphia, like if you just did that, I would go Best Buy, and then all of a sudden I have to like follow the breadcrumbs to be able to get there, and that's super annoying. So don't ever do that. These are bad practices. These are that kid at the beginning that couldn't figure out that the square peg goes in the square hole. So that's how it could have happened. This is another reference that nobody's gonna get. Does anybody get this one? Shit, I need older people. Yes! Thank you. This is from Clue, which, by the way, if you haven't seen it, Tim Curry, hilarious, great movie. Here's what could have happened. Here's how you can use a billboard to amplify content. Now just think if you were to pass this by, right? You have to think about who's potentially driving on this road, what you want them to get out of it, and how you can make it happen. Here's one. Three most important things to do before she turns three. Get the guide free, 3before3.com. Could you remember that? Possibly, maybe, but probably better than a lot of the really terrible billboards. So not bad, maybe not my best work, but you get the idea. 3before3, it's memorable, it's short. Three most important things before she turns three, good for a financial advisor or somebody that sells life insurance, something like that. Learn social media in 5 minutes per day, sign up free. This isn't a real course, social5min.com. But if you wanna learn social media in 5 minutes a day, use social media for 5 minutes a day. Online dating sucks, learn how to beat the system, hitchphilly.com, that is real. That's an online dating course that I created. It's $29. So that's one. Here's how you can use a business card to build an online community. This is my personal story. I actually really like telling this. So, I mean, there's part of it that's like a little sad, so during the sad part, can you go, aww? Cool, thanks. So, story time. In 2013, I got divorced. Thanks, it's okay. You should say congratulations. That wasn't the all part. Anyway, point is, I moved out. It happens. I had to take all my shit and find somewhere to go. So I moved, with my heart broken, to the Marine Club. It was a nice big condo building. There were about 300 units in it, about 600 people. And I moved in, I liked it. It had electric stoves, I like gas stoves. What can you do? So I was there for a little bit and I began to notice this thing. And mind you, I hadn't been single for a very long time, but I noticed that nobody talked to anybody. The only people that talked to each other were the dog owners. And that's my dog, Emma Love. That's the odd part. Good. So only the dog owners were talking to each other. We had this little dog run and we would all talk to each other. And I realized that I had a network in this giant building of about 8 people. And they all became friends of mine. All the people that were the dog people, I knew their dogs, I knew them, I would go out for drinks with them. It was really cool, and I felt like part of a community. It was great. So here's what I did. I went to a website called favacards.com, and it's by Jack Prince, and they make these cute little cards that look just like that. And I started a Facebook group for the Marine Club, and I got 200 of these printed, or 250 of these printed. And then I got, do you remember that sticky tack stuff you had in elementary school that you could like stick stuff and it would just put, anyway, I went around to every single door and I stuck one of these to it, around the 300 units. And we grew a community, which actually pissed off the Marine Club, and they told me to take it down, and then I got like all like, revolution, no, you can't shut down my voice. And I didn't. I'm a rebel. Anyway, the result was that we got 40 members in 30 days, which I know some of you are like, oh, you didn't get a million members. It's 40 members still. It was awesome. And the result of that was I got 5 dates, which was pretty awesome. I mean, that's good for one building, right? Nailed it. Found one dog walker. And when I moved, I sold 6 pieces of furniture, which is pretty awesome. And we had a whole bunch of these barbecue drunken patio days things scheduled. And we all got together and we laughed. That's how I used a business card to build a community. And you can do it too. Another one that I do, just real quick on the business card thing, I use these favorite cards for a lot. I have one for my food blog. So when I go to a restaurant, the slant of my food blog is that I only write positive food reviews. So I highlight things that are delicious. I never write a negative review. So if I leave a card, it means I like something that you had. So when I go to a restaurant, I always have a few with me, and I can even show you one. And I leave it there, and on the one side it says, the foodie was here. And on the back, it has the website for my blog. So it's one of the ways that I'm driving traffic offline to an online property. Also, you should start a food blog because you can write off a lot of your meals. Smart. Always thinking. So here's how you use a radio ad to generate leads. So as opposed to the lengthy one from before, you have to start with the value and you have to make it a simple call to action. So, if you've been considering a Nissan Maxima, Toyota Camry, or a Honda Accord, download our free comparison guide. Get the guide at www.carcompare.guide. That's www.carcompare.guide. Could you remember that from point A to point B, or at least to the next red light? Probably, because it's short, it's sweet, and I've given you the value statement up front. So what happens then? So now I get them from the radio to carcompare.guide, right? And I get them in there, and obviously I'm going to trigger an email automation sequence, where the first one would be like, here's the guide, hey, here's some things you need to consider, here's, you know, some of the safety ratings, yada, 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 right? But that's only the start. You ready for this? Shabam. Wow. Put a Facebook pixel on there and a Twitter pixel. Oh my God, now you can take everybody that submits the email, make them a custom audience, and you can look for them on your social networks for organic social growth and connect with them on the Snapchatties and everywhere else. And then once they convert, that becomes a custom audience where you can create a lookalike audience to the people who have already, am I blowing anybody's mind? Yes. Sweet. And then you can do Facebook ads that you've retargeted them. You can do Twitter ads that are retargeted them. You can use YouTube ads that are retargeted them because you now have the most precious thing in the world, and that's their email. So long as they use that email to sign up for stuff and don't give you the junk one. So that's how you can use a radio ad to drive leads. And this is the same principle you can use with anything, whether it's a billboard, a print ad, magazine, doesn't matter. You can do all of this. All good?
Do you want to pose?
I'm always posing. Here's how you can use an event to amplify content. You guys ready for this? This one's really freaking cool. Using a live event to amplify content that you've created. Let's say that you went through all of the trouble of putting together, I don't know, a white paper. Like a white paper on like the complete and essentials of the entire world of social media strategy. Well, you can do something like this. You can get it right there. That's real. So if you go there, you can actually download that white paper. I am using this event right now to amplify content. So you see how meta this is? It's like an enigma wrapped in a mystery. It's like a mirror reflecting upon itself. Or you could do this one, which is the guide to selling social media woo-woo. You know the social media douchebag I referred to earlier? The general characterization of that person. This is how you find out how, one, not to be that person, and two, how to spot them if you're ever trying to hire them. So that's how you can amplify content marketing at an event. Here's how you can use direct mail to generate leads. Let's say you send out a piece of email. Now again, I think of all traditional marketing as as a content marketing type opportunity. Like, you really have to start with the value of the person that you're reaching out to. So let's say that you are the type of, you're a mortgage banker and you do refinancing. You could send out a checklist. Now, this is value you're sending to them. Should you refinance your home? Here's the checklist. And you have them go through it. And maybe you could send them to an online calculator if you feel like it. But you have them do this checklist and you say, look, if you got below a 6, you should book an appointment with me today. And from there, you can set up something like Calendly or there's Schedule Once. There's a number of online calendaring solutions. And you can drive them with a URL. You can do the redirect from that URL to your calendar app, and you can have them book an appointment with you. So if you're gonna do direct mail, make it super easy and actionable, because they do this work, any of the people, let's say you get a 2% conversion rate on however many you send out, they go to the back and they can easily go and book their appointment right from the phone that they're sitting there with the direct mail. Make it super easy and actionable. Calendly is actually really dope. If you have trouble with your calendar, I strongly suggest it. I have trouble with my calendar. So I want to talk just a bit more on measurement, and I realize we're a little bit ahead of time, but not too far ahead of time, and I want to get Miri out to her thing, and we'll have time for some questions, which I don't know how I do that. Can I moderate my own questions? Passing around the mic? I don't know. Anyway. So if you're running several different campaigns, let's say 3 different billboards, and they're 200 miles away from each other, you should build in a method of measuring them, because that sort of thing can actually inform your online campaigns. Let's say, you know, you've got New York. This is not 200 miles away. I'm really bad with geography. But let's say you have, like, New York, Chicago, and, like, I don't know, Sarasota, Florida or something, and you run 3 billboards and you have 3 different landing pages, you should be able to figure out which one is working best. And then if you swap up the ad copy on all of them, if you see a change in that, you can see which ad copy, which sort of messaging is resonating with an audience. Now, you could do it that way, or you could do it this way using UTM tags and have them all go to a single landing page. Your choice. It's up to you. One more thing, radios, same sort of thing. If you are doing campaigns on multiple radio stations where you're trying to hit multiple audiences and maybe you have different messaging, you want to bring them to individual landing pages so you can track which one is working. And same thing with print ads, different phone numbers or different landing pages or whatever. You're starting to get the point, hopefully. And then same thing if you're doing multiple campaigns across different types of traditional media, you'll want to make sure that you're tracking each and every one of them individually. Because at some point, either your marketing manager or you are going to look at the marketing budget and what you've spent and have to be accountable for what you spent and where. So build in this measurement, please. So that was the sort of the graphic. If you want to take that picture, I put it at the end just in case you want to take one more picture of it. But so there is the checklist, and I believe that's the last slide. Yep. So that's the last slide if anybody wants it. But Q&A. All right, hands up so I can see who wants a question and answer.
Doing a campaign where I need to get credit for inviting people to something online, but I've tried this in the past where I invite them to a unique URL like grammarly.com/uOregon. Mm-hmm. People are not going to remember the uOregon part. They're just going to go to grammarly.com. Mm-hmm. How should I tell the campaign manager, how can I get credit, you know?
So what I would do with that is I would buy a shortened URL, like kevininvitedme.com, I don't know, making that up. And then from there, you would have that 301 redirect to your site, but add the UTM tag. So when you're going to the Oregon, whatever, grammarly.com/Oregon, at the end, you're gonna have the UTM tags where it says UTM source, Kevin, UTM medium, Kevin, UTM, I forget what the other one is, but it'll have all those UTM tags at the end. So what happens is in the analytics, when you look at that Grammarly page, it's going to show how many hits came from Kevin. And if you have goals set up, you'll actually see how many conversions.
All right. About what's the cost on that?
Zero. Well, to buy the domain would cost you like $10, but yeah.
Besides your awesome marine club, stay close. Besides your awesome, well, I forgot you have a mic on. besides your awesome marine club example, what real life, really easy to execute things have you seen that have been super, super successful? Like implementing a shortened URL, something as quick and easy as that mm-hmm. has been the game changer for some of your clients.
The majority of my clients, I'm using 2 mics now. Majority of my clients, I'm really driving, I'm using the online to push to the offline. In the instances where we've used offline to online, we're using things like shortened URLs to get people to come to happy hour. So a good example, I work with Anytime Fitness, and I bought anytimephilly.com. Now, mind you, they're a franchise, so we didn't even have access to their website. Like, I can't touch it, I can't put a pixel on it, I can't do anything. So I built them a Tumblr blog in order to fill content to their Facebook and their Twitter, and I was able to put a Facebook pixel there. And then also I got the domain where I did hh.anytimephilly.com, and all of our printed materials allowed us to drive people to that to go directly to the place where they could buy their membership. Now again, the problem is we didn't have access to the platform where we can actually see conversions, so I can't put a conversion pixel, I can't do anything with them. So most of my clients are actually, strangely enough, not doing much with offline to online. They don't have the budget for billboards. They're not doing much in the way of print. In the ways that we have used print, I was working with financial advisory and law firm sister organizations. And whenever we would put in a print ad, we would always drive them to download our white paper or something like that. So instead of just like, hey, look who we are, it was, hey, come online and get this particular thing. So I can't point to anything that I would say is super, super successful. I think that the little business cards have worked really well for a lot of the initiatives, but like nothing has been like a runaway success, in at least in my client base. Not because of the lack of idea, just a lack of budget. I mean, as long as there's, so for those that didn't hear the question, is there still a value in print marketing, or is it just about using print right now to get them all online? I would say what I say about any brand new network that's out, or any bright, shiny thing versus anything that's old, whatever. If there's an opportunity now, that's all that matters. So right now, there are people that read newspapers. Right now, there are people that read trade journals. Right now, there are people, believe it or not, that still have their secretary print out their email and read it. I shit you not, it's real. So the point is that if there's an audience there that you're trying to reach, if you know that your audience is using a particular channel, try and use that to engage them in the best way possible. If you can get them online, do it. Anybody that's reading a newspaper has an email address. I can almost guarantee you that. So at the very least, try and trade them good information for an email address, and that way you can find out if they're elsewhere. That's generally how I look at it, and you have to test it. So, you know, the previous slides, I showed all the different things. That's the point of the measurement, is we can't say for certain, yes, you should be using newspapers, or yes, you should be on TV, but if we build in measurement to both of those, we can then say, here's what we spent on it, and here's what we got for it, in the same way that we spend on Facebook ads, and we get a certain return for it. Ooh, look at you. But didn't you? But weren't you you were coughing a lot, because you had a lot of the public speaking.
I was coughing a lot.
Yeah, so I'm gonna, let's just
hear. Could you just tell us a little bit about your background, please?
Sure. Do you want the 60-second how I got here? What? I'm not going to give you the 4-minute version. So long story short, when I was 13, I wanted to be the point guard for the New York Knicks. I am 5'5", white, and I was brought up in a Jewish household. Wasn't going to happen. Then I decided I was going to go to film school, and I was going to be the next Stanley Kubrick. That didn't happen because I chose the wrong film school, and also, I don't think I was that good at it. But also, it was kind of a weird time. It was analog to digital transition, so that didn't work. Then I realized that what I really liked was photography. So I decided that I was going to travel around the globe and take pictures of half-naked ladies for Maxim and Sports Illustrated. This is true. I'm bearing my soul to you, so please, be gentle. That didn't happen because, believe it or not, there's a lot of competition among early 20s guys that want to go do that. So then I was like, okay, let me refresh. What am I really good at? I was like, I've been cooking since I was 7. I think there's a need in the marketplace for a personal chef service. Boom, started a personal chef service. Turns out it was about a little over a decade too early because it's the things that are very popular right now that you can order from your phone, but we didn't have phones back then. So anyway, that all came crumbling down. I was like, all right, shit, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I went back to school, got my MBA, came out. It was 2007, 2008, and I saw social media. And what I saw was, here's a new thing that's going to disrupt and change everything that we know about our lives. And I think that it's going to be a massive game changer to how brands interact with consumers, how employees interact with each other, how brands interact with employees, how brands interact with their community. I just thought, major game changer. And here I am, I'm 28. Nobody knows any more than anybody else. So I am going to run faster than anybody else can about this and learn more about it than anybody else can. And that's what I did. And basically I came out, I went to a management consulting firm for 2 years, then I went to a PR firm for a year, and then I started my company in 2011, and I've been doing it for 5 years now, and it's probably the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my career. I wrote a post about it on my Day in the Life blog, which you should all check out also, called How to Find Your True Love and Die Happy, and my whole perspective on your career should be that you should go after things that really excite you and that you love And eventually, if you keep doing that, you'll wind up in a spot where you're doing something that you love. And even if you're not being compensated as much as you would in a soul-crushing job, you'll be much happier and satisfied. And that's my career path in a nutshell. Saw one over there. How much time do I have? I'm gonna
give. What was the name of the business card printer?
Oh, Favicards. F-A-V-I-C-A-R-D-S. Favicards. They're really cool. I use them for all sorts of stuff. They're inexpensive. They're small. The only thing is, I wish they had some sort of like a business card carrier for them, because they don't really fit normal business card things. But you can toss them. They're like, they're awesome. Yeah, I could probably. I mean, I could put it up there. It's. Yeah, I'll put it on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter and I'll put it up there. I mean, I can give you two routes to take. One is like the total, kind of like the asshole route. Like, I would just walk in and be like, so can you prove the effectiveness of anything that you're doing? Cool, I'm gonna show you how we can do that. Sit down. And I would explain it to them. But that probably wouldn't work, and it's why I work for myself. The other route would probably be to really force the issue a little bit. I mean, if you heard Ellie speak yesterday, how she kind of poked her head in places where, you know, maybe they weren't looking for her in the company, but she just kind of like forced the issue a bit. I think that's kind of what you have to do in here, because there are people that are going to be resistant to this because they don't understand it. And I think what happens is that throughout our lifetimes, the things that we learn at a certain point in our life are revolutionary. Things we learn a little bit later are the things that we're going to stick with, and then everything that comes after is a fad or something we can't be bothered with. And there's a lot of people that are still in roles that are unwilling to accept new things. And we have to try and bring them along in the best way possible by explaining it to them and talking about how it's not displacing them, it's augmenting what they do. So you kind of have to force the issue a bit and be willing to put up with it and educate them on how it works. I mean, I got into social business in 2008. That's not a term that anybody uses. And I ranked number one on it for Google forever, but nobody ever contacted me because of it. And the truth of the matter is, it's still something that may not ever come to fruition. So you have to learn a little bit that the things that you think are really important may not be your audience's primary concerns or things that they know about. They may be so far behind you that what you really have to focus on is educating them on what these things mean. My name is Jeff Gibbard. I have been both your speaker, your MC, and my own hype man. And I hope that you follow me on Snapchat, you download all that stuff. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, want to give me feedback, want to look at my stupid snaps, please, I encourage you to do so. Hit me on Twitter. It's my favorite thing in the entire world. And I really appreciate your time, attention, and love.